Stations all over the U.S., North America, Puerto Rico, Guam, and by satellite. We are Coast to Coast AM. Your host, Connie Willis, going to talk about art now. Let's get a little visual going on here. Let's say you're out digging somewhere and you find something interesting. You know, it doesn't really matter what kind of, let's go with a bone. All right, let's go with a skull. All right. And you know, it could be just a little squirrel, a little raccoon. Could be an elongated skull. Okay, whatever it is, imagine taking that little skull and recreating it with clay or anything that you might have to recreate it to bring it back to life again. So let's say it was a little squirrel. And all of a sudden you saw the little squirrel's face come to life again. Would that be something? Isn't that interesting? So imagine if, you know, these people bring these elongated skulls and these other skulls that are like, well, that's unusual. And they take it. And they are good artists, not like me, that would make it look like some Mr. Bill splatted type thing. But anybody remember that Mr. Bill, right? Oh, no. Anyway, the splatted version of Mr. Bill would have been what I would do. But you get a great artist, and they have this visual of being able to take that skull or that bone, whatever it might be, but we're going to go with the skulls on this one, and bring it back to life to where you actually see it, what it might have looked like when it was alive. Go there. Think about that. And if you ever get a chance to meet Marcia K. Moore in person and her artwork, or even get to go to see her work just on her website, you'll be amazed at what she's done with these skulls that people have found. So if you can do it yourself with a little animal you found, that'd be cute and wonderful and awesome. But imagine if you can bring history alive again, and especially things that we're like, what was this? Is this real? What would this have looked like back then? Things that we're not even sure if they still even existed, but we have the skull to prove that it did. And then she brings it back to life. And not only can she bring it back to life, but she can animate it too. And I'm telling you, it's freaky, creepy, unbelievable, fascinating, all in one. I wouldn't want it in the same room that I was sleeping in. Just saying, it's, you know, it's just a little doll thing that I already have, you know, as a kid. So anyway, let's bring in an artist compelled to reconstruct the story of our lost history for sure with these found elongated skulls. And she's using traditional art tools and modern software technology. And she's doing just that. She's bringing them alive. And she will show you in pictures how she's done it from beginning to end. And it's absolutely amazing. Now, a lot of people have been here on Coast to Coast and they've talked about her. And I am so happy, and no offense to anybody, she's never been on Coast, so I get it. Yay, woohoo, yay, listen to the crowd roar. I got it, so I'm happy. So let's bring on Marcia K. Moore. It is not Marcia, it's Marcia. Hey, Marcia, welcome to Coast, how are you?
Hi, Connie, that was the best introduction ever.
Yay.
That made me even interested. I was like, oh, my gosh.
Who is this lady?
Exactly. Which makes me think what brought me to this moment, you know? Never in my wildest dreams did I think I would be reconstructing our ancients to repatriate our lost history here in North America and South America. But here I am talking to you about it. So here we are.
I know. I love it. I mean, would you have ever thought, one day, here's you as a little seven-year-old kid. Yeah, one day I'm going to take a skull, and I am going to create it and make it come alive. Who would ever even think that?
No, but you know what? As you go through life, and in hindsight, of course, when you just start looking at all those chapters of life, you do see the path and you see how it unfolds. And mm-hmm. I do know how I have come to this moment because of all of the all of the moments that brought me here, all of the tools as an artist that has brought me here, all of the learning, the knowledge that has brought me here. And so it's obvious, and for me, why I'm doing this now. So I'm here as an artist. I'm not here as a forensic artist because I'm not a trained forensic artist, but I know enough about anatomy, and you can Google anything you want.
Yes.
You can Google your degree if you want to.
So yes.
I just learned how to forensically, on my own, forensically reconstruct these elongated skulls because nobody was. And I felt it rather a responsibility as an artist coming from where I come from, I guess, with my skill set. And I wanted to put a face on these ancient peoples.
Do you think that
people... bring it back to life.
And you are. Do you think that people will hold that against you that, hey, she is not, she has no degree or anything, she has no skills or proper teaching with forensics? Do you think that that's going to come back and bite you at one point with people?
No. You know, honestly, I don't care.
Yeah. Hey, bite me, right? Yeah.
I'm doing the work as, you know, also when I look at this, I'm looking at this as my own soul journey, my own soul growth, so to speak. So it's my work, and it's work that is yet getting out to the public so they can see it. So it's my journey. So do I care? No, I could care less. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. I am passionate about what I do, and I will go the distance helping other alternative researchers around the globe. But ultimately, this is my passion, and I'm following the trail that I'm supposed to follow. So,
spoken like a true artist right
well,
there.
I don't know. What, maybe.
Well, no, definitely, for sure. Now, okay, so how did this happen that one day, there's a skull, I'm going to do something to it? Or did someone say, hey, here's a skull, can you make this come alive? How did it happen with bringing, you know, having a skull in your hand and going, hey, I can do something with this?
Well, it's an interesting story. I spent 15 years in Florida and never thought in my wildest dreams again that I'd ever live in Florida, but I did. And honestly, Florida is an amazing place. It has phenomenal ancient history. You strip away the humans now and the architecture, and you have, if you dig into the land, you've got amazing, amazing history. So when I was in Florida, I had started a story, kind of a hopeful animation. And as an artist, I wanted to not only write the story, but also create the characters. And I'm a pretty diversified artist, so I was creating these characters in all mediums. I mean, I was sketching them, I was painting them, I was sculpting them, and then I wanted them to start walking and talking. And I thought, well, you know, when you do that, then you have to start understanding how to animate them and how to bring them to life in 3D form. So I was doing that, and as I was doing that, these characters, a lot of the characters had elongated craniums. I mean, the character just, it just felt good to create this with an elongated skull. Keeping in mind that this story was about ancient Florida. It was about our indigenous communities 3,000 years ago, our Colusa Indians, which were mound builders in Florida. And I was concentrating on them. So, you know, all of this is kind of unfolding. You know, when you're working and getting in tune with the land and getting in tune with a story, and it's coming through you. And I am an artist in that regard, and I can say that. I have license to say that because that's how artists work. We intuitively let it flow through us. Mm-hmm. And I can honestly say that those energies do, once you get in tune with something, it does flow right through you. So these characters were coming through, and they had elongated craniums, and I was creating them Through social media, through Facebook, I had connected with Brian Forrester, who we all know is a alternative researcher that lives down in Peru, and he works extensively, his research is extensively regarded to the elongated skull and also our megalithic structures. But I had created this character that had an elongated cranium, and I presented it to him. I didn't know him, but I presented it to him through Facebook, and I said, you know what, this is something I have done. I notice you are studying the elongated skulls, and if you'd like to show this to your audience who are following you, go right ahead. And he did that, and everyone went absolutely wild because nobody had seen a face put on these elongated skulls. And it's a visual that creates such an impact when you bring back an ancient. And even though this character really probably, you know, it was my own, it came through me, but yet it related to the ancients of the Paracas from Peru. So everyone was excited to see this. And this actually started everything for me because I got interested, more interested in the subject matter. And so my story had a few side trails. And one of the side trails, of course, was the research of elongated craniums.
At that point, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Is that, at one point did people then, hey, here's a skull, and then you went right from that skull and created?
Well, then from that point on, I had learned how to create with 3D software. And I asked Brian if he would send me photos from every angle of the skull, and I would reconstruct through 3D software. And that's how I got started. And I created probably 18 to 20 reconstructions that way.
Oh.
That was kind of the initial.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
They're amazing.
So there were no like skulls in my possession. In fact, I might add, I'm from the state of Iowa. I was born and raised there, and I have a adopted mother and friend. She's passed now, but her name was Maria Pearson. She was Yankton Sioux, and she initiated NAGPRA, which is the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, from the state of Iowa in 1990. And in many ways, I felt like I was following in her footsteps because the research of the elongated skulls and also the reconstructions really made me feel like this was a way to repatriate our lost history here in North America and South America. And I was able to do that through my artwork, and I am doing that through my artwork. So it's giving people visuals, and hopefully it makes a difference. I'm hoping that it does.
Oh, my goodness. For those of you that have never seen her work. First off, of course, we have on our website where you can go to her website and go to her Facebook pages and all the different things out there of her that you could go see them. But you can also check them out on coasttocoastam.com. We have some things listed there. I was looking through and of what we put up there, and it's amazing, you guys, what you're going to see. I mean, it's amazing. But one of the one things that's up that's not up there that I was hoping would be up there, and I guess really to me it's the prize of all prizes, and you'll have to go to her site to see them, and that's the animated one that I spoke about earlier. I will have nightmares. It's beautiful, it's wonderful, but it's also so freaky. Do you know what I mean? You know I'm not insulting your work, right? You know I'm just going, holy cow, this thing's alive. It is alive, and it's looking, and it's almost like something you saw in, what is it, Futurama, where they walk around with the heads and they hold on to the heads because, you know, I guess one day they're going to have a body, or maybe they're just the heads in the Futurama cartoon. But you see this head, and it's just, you can, and the way she has put this together and animated it, it's as though it is going, it is awakened again. And it's like, wow, I'm awake. Hey, I am back again. Oh, and it smiles and it like thinks, and then it's amazing. You did that. You know what I mean?
I know. I'm glad you like that.
I do.
So that's really cool. Yeah. I mean, once you start, you know, adding some movement, then you're like, oh my gosh. I mean, you have really repatriated this individual. They have come back. They have, you know, while you're creating, they're showing you, honestly, it seems like the soul of this entity is actually showing you how to reconstruct it. And then, of course, when you put some movement to it, you're like, well, there you have it. There it is.
And she did, you guys, and it is there, and you're going to go, oh, my gosh, this thing's alive, run. It's, like, amazing. I mean, the eyes, they're the real glass eyes, you know. You guys, it's just, anyway, we definitely go see that one for sure. But you'll look at the other ones. That one I just can't get out of my head. It's beautifully put together. It's so colorful as well. But to see the eyebrows, yeah, I'll have to go back to it. To see the eyebrows moving. And it's kind of like smiling. And then it's like in wonder. And hey, everybody, you're listening to Coast AM. This is Connie Willis, and we are talking with artist Marcia K. Moore, who has brought these elongated skulls and then some back to life again. We'll talk to her more when we come back. Another very interesting show here on Coast to Coast AM, the real theater of the mind. And I'm Connie Willis, another theater of the mind. Well, you know, you can kind of think about things in the past, and you can look at these old skulls that people have found and dug up, and you can go, wow, look at that. Look at that. What do you think that was? What were they like? But Marcia K. Moore will bring it to life for you and give you an even better idea what they may have looked like with the flesh and the tone that she puts to them. Myself and producer Mike Cosio, we're looking at it, the animated one that I'm telling you about, and he just looked at it. They're just really cool. It's just a 1 minute, 6 second video of the animated man, I guess. Well, Marcia, what is it called? Tell me more. Is it the ayahuasca? Is it ayahuasca ascension? Is that what you call the animated face?
Yeah, that was the title that I gave it. But it's that was actually a 3D sculpture, and with a real simple animation tool, I was able to get that to kind of sync with some music and kind of get some facial movement and some eye movement and some mouth movement. And I just thought it was kind of fun.
It is fun.
it's just an experiment. It's like a studio experiment. So that was what that was all about. But
you got to take off with that. It's really cool. The music's perfect. That's why I said, you got to make sure you have the music on when you watch this, because it's so effective. It's just, that's the makings of something, some horror flick out there that's going to be.
Oh, no, that was the connection that I was having with the story and the animation that I was working on. So that was an experiment. And it has brought me here. And I'm talking
I love
to
it.
You.
There you go. I love it. Well, that's the thing that made me go, I got to talk to this chick. So I'm looking at some of the other things, too, that you put together. And a question and I don't know the names of them. It looks like it's a woman with the elongated skull. And she looks, it's amazing, the depiction that you have put together. It's I wish I had a name of it, but what I noticed about this is something that was questioned a long time ago with skulls. And so I don't know if you know the answer to this or not, but it is amazing how you did construct it. And this was a long time ago with the Star Child skull. Now, mm-hmm. you know, now, do you know anything about the Star Child skull? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. I know a little bit about it. Mm-hmm.
Lloyd. Okay. Died. Yeah, Lloyd. And there's, it's kind of gone into all sorts of different things, and it's kind of been saying, oh, now it's like, okay, it was just a normal child. There's no more to this. So there's a lot to the Star Child. However, at one point, one of the things that Lloyd had brought up was a part of the bottom of the skull was in a position to where this is what he had said at the time, that if the rest of the body was connected to it, this would have been, and of course he was all about it being an alien, you know, half of it, that, and maybe all of it at one point he said, but it would be up in space and you wouldn't need it where like an earthling would need it to be, because an earthling, because we, you know, have gravity, so we need to hold our head a certain way from the spine, where this skull didn't need that because it was in space, so it was more in the center. Does this make sense, what I'm talking about? Because apparently in space, right, you don't need it holding your head. It would need to be, spine would be in the middle, because even if you would have one, I guess, according to what our earlier guest had said. But you have taken this one skull and made this lady, her neck is curved and then her back curves to match the elongated head in the back. Yeah. And it was like you really played with that, where he had said, hey, this can live in space because it doesn't need to be in a certain area because of the gravity. We need it in a certain area to hold up our head because of gravity, where if something came from space, it didn't need that. Anyway, I saw you playing with that to where you made it this whole other thing where the backside was just different than ours to help support that elongated head. And I just found that very interesting.
Right. Well, you know, when you take a look at these elongated skulls, there is a percentage, and I think it's around 4%, that appear to be very natural. So natural meaning they were not deformed. We're not talking about cranial deformation. So if they were natural, and also we're also finding out that the if you look at the skull underneath the foramen magnum, I believe it's called, is where, you know, the base of the neck and the spine and the skull kind of meet. Mm-hmm. With a human, it's that center is more towards the center. I mean, it's pushed up a little bit further towards, you know, like your mouth area, where the elongated skulls, the 4% that seem natural, that foramen magnum is pushed way back. I mean, way back to the tippy back.
Yeah.
So if you are reconstructing this, and this kind of goes back to my, this goes back to my architecture days. I was an illustrator for an architectural company, and they always use the principle of form follows function. You just do that with architecture. But, you know, you do that with any object. So when I took a look at these skulls, and if the foramen magnum is way pushed way to the back, and if form follows function, then you are going to have a form that has to balance that head. You're not going to walk around with this stiff-necked, you know, head. It's going to have probably an S curve. It's going to walk differently. The anatomy is going to be totally different. So I know which one you're talking about. And so I have, I created that to kind of emphasize that form, and for people to open up their minds to the possibilities of a species that had an elongated head that maybe, with that elongated head, you're going to have a longer neck. Mm-hmm. Because form follows function. So, and then the body is just going to follow the same form as the head and the neck. So everything is going to be a little bit lankier and longer and a little bit more displaced more than a human would be. So that's where I got that. And then in doing that, you know, most of my work is intuitive. And then comes the research. And then I'm, you know, as I'm creating, maybe an alternative researcher will come to me and go, wow, we've discovered this. And I'll go, you know what? I already did. I already did that because intuitively.
Love it.
It comes naturally. But that's a good relationship. And that's what I think all researchers should follow. You know, follow your gut. And that is ultimately going to take you to the source of those hard facts. It just does. And maybe, you know, and maybe I shouldn't say that, but maybe women are just better at that. Maybe we just know how to do that a little bit better. We do follow our, we're a little bit more intuitive on that level. You know, I think we do that better.
No argument here. I agree. Okay. Women stand up.
Well, and there's plenty of men out there that, you know,
that do
have the same kind of energy. But what I'm saying is, I think that intuitively, if we could just trust that trail,
yeah,
it will take us to the information that we need ultimately. So, or if you can balance that, I mean, alternative researchers balance that with me because I'm starting with the intuitive and then they bring me the hard research, you know? So anyway, in doing this structure, I had been working with, kind of casually working with L.A. Marzulli on this because he had researched that there was a race of giants that had descended from the, and I'm going to say Anak, I'm not really sure if that's Anakim, maybe. I'm not really sure. I can't really remember specifically. But they were actually a race of giants that had elongated skulls and long necks. So he put two and two together. So alternative researchers and I are always kind of working together on that level. And that's how I came up with that structure. Form follows function. It just is obvious to me and with any kind of species.
And it looks, as strange as it looks very natural and right on.
Absolutely. Yeah. It doesn't take too long to go, wow, that actually looks
right,
normal for the skull and the body. And then once you start to look at that, then you think, wow, well, then what was their walk like? How did they present themselves walking, you know? These are all interpretations, to be honest with you. They're not, you know, everything's an interpretation. But as I reconstruct, this is what I'm coming up with, so...
So what do you think about these elongated skulls? Why were they there at one point? Now they're not. Do you believe they were, that was that head binding thing?
Well, the head binding thing existed for a very long time. I mean, up until the early 1900s here in North America, we had indigenous communities that were head binding. I moved from Florida specifically to Washington this last June to kind of get closer to our Northwest Coast indigenous communities, those that were headbinders, to get closer to the subject, to get closer to the knowledge, start talking with the elders. I mean, I've made a lot of strong connections up here, and there were headbinders until there weren't, meaning there were headbinders until colonization, and then it was outlawed, so they couldn't do it anymore. And that's kind of a shame because I believe that head binding, who they were emulating, I have some interesting theories on that. So
please tell us, because I just can't imagine that. I mean, I don't know. I would have been glad if somebody said, okay, it's illegal now. Okay, thank you. Take this off of me. You know?
I don't know. I mean, this head shape is kind of a beautiful shape when you think about it. And when I'm actually reconstructing, when I'm specifically reconstructing in 3D, the shape just you know, when you're reconstructing the 3D as in the computer, it just flows very naturally. So it seems to be a very, really natural shape to me. So maybe our shapes aren't so natural. maybe that's something we need to think about. So
yeah, we were squashed at one point for sure.
So anyway, as far as who they were emulating, well, you know, nobody knows specifically, but you can make some assumptions. And living here in the Northwest Coast, you know, the trail of all of this has been very interesting for me because it seems like I started with the elongated skulls while I was in Florida. And then also while in Florida, I started to kind of reconstruct our mound builders in the Mississippi and Ohio valleys. And those were some of the people in the mounds were of taller stature. We have 7 foot, 8 foot skeleton remains. And although that is lost history, it's not talked about anymore. There are, all you have to do is Google it, or all you have to do is go to these alternative researchers that have been really studying it, and you'll find out all the information you want. But, and then I made the move to Washington to specifically be around those that were headbinders here in the Northwest Coast. But there were headbinders all over North America. It wasn't just isolated here, but the majority of them that were headbinding, I think, probably were up here in the Northwest Coast. But it also, oddly, I think, leads us to our Sasquatch community.
And how is that?
I've been led in a direction. I mean, some of these people, you know, our indigenous communities, they were emulating something. If you go to our Kwakiwak people up on Vancouver Island, our Kwatsino, our Koskomo peoples up there on Vancouver Island, you will see that they were specifically headbinders, especially the Kwatsino people. And a lot of the women seemed like were probably, the women were more of the headbinders than the men, although men were headbinders as well. But the elite were supposedly the ones that reshaped their heads. And but if you look at our indigenous communities in those areas and along the coast, you find a lot of the ceremonies, a lot of the potlatches, a lot of the stories, a lot of the family crests, a lot of the masks are related to the wild woman of the woods or the wild man of the woods. And the relationship is there. I've asked elders, and they said that the elongated heads, the reshaping, was to emulate that of our forest people, our Sasquatch people.
Huh. Wow. Yep, because they're always seen with like a cone type head.
The Sasquatch, yes, the forest people are always seen, not always, but there's a lot that are represented as dome-shaped heads, yes.
Yeah.
And if you look at the heads here in the Northwest Coast, you'll get that rather dome-shaped kind of sugar loaf head shape that is kind of specific of our Sasquatch people. Now, I'm not saying that that's the only reason.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you about that when we come back. This is Marcia K. Moore we're talking with, and we're talking about her artwork from the elongated skulls. Beautiful stuff. Connie Willis here. Stay with us. More to come on Coast to Coast AM.